Arnold, welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 205. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Once a week, I interview a well-known expert from the fields of personal development, education, career and life planning, and other disciplines who share experiences, tools, and insights to help our listeners along their journeys. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured expert, Megan Kent. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you, Don.
Yes, it's a pleasure to be with you. Megan Kent has spent much of her career working for the world's top advertising agencies. She has shaped the brand strategy for many of the world's most influential brands, BMW, Coca-Cola, New York Times, Microsoft, Brand USA. Her passion and commitment to understanding people's relationships with brands drove her to the study of not only what people think, but how people think. The distillation of her learning in this area, combined with over 20 years in marketing, has led Megan to create a proprietary system for helping brands connect more powerfully with people. It's called Brain-Friendly Branding, 8 Essential Principles for Creating a Personal Brand a Brain Can Love. So today's topic is about branding yourself, right, Megan? How a person in their life and career, whether they're just getting started or pre-retirement, can consistently put forth an image and a message that represents authentically who they are.
Absolutely. I've spent the better part of my career really studying and learning and working with brands to figure out how to put their best selves into the marketplace. And to be honest with you, at some point, I started realizing that there was all of this information out in the marketplace about not only my job was always to understand as a brand strategist what consumers think, but I'll be honest with you, I found myself right after I started working in New York, I had arrived at this really fantastic advertising agency, and I went out to a cocktail party one night, and somebody said, "Oh, you work in advertising. Well, you must know all about the psychology, sociology, anthropology, neuroscience of consumers." And I thought to myself, wow, there's so much more information available in the world about not only what people think. We had become experts of asking people what they think about brands, what they think about our commercials. But all of a sudden, I realized there was a whole plethora of information increasingly available to us with the whole oncoming of neuroscience and behavioral economics. So I set out to apply and learn not only, yes, what people think, but how they think by taking a really deep dive into neuroscience.
Fascinating. When I think about this and the work that you're doing, and we've had a couple of nice chats, and I don't know where this is in the continuum because I was in advertising, I got out of advertising in 1990 or so. Where did the account planner come into this equation?
Well, account planning started when Jay Shiat brought this discipline to the United States in 1985. Okay. And the idea was really, let's not keep the consumer in the back room with the researchers where they're really just validating or giving us data in terms of the consumer's thoughts and feelings. Let us bring a consumer representative to the table with the account person and the creative person so that all of the decisions we're making are actually including the consumer's point of view as we're creating campaigns.
Yes, exactly. Didn't it start in England?
It did. It did.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. Well, that's really when it began to open up and be a lot more integrative and holistic, right?
Well, yes. Jay Shiat brought it to the United States, and we started using account planning. Frankly, I was at Shiat Day when we did the famous Mac introduction.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it was a really exciting time, and you know, still that campaign or that Super Bowl ad by Ridley Scott is heralded as the best ad of all time.
Oh, listen, I can see it. I've looked at it 100 times. It's just total genius.
Yes, yes. It was a very exciting time.
Of course, it was total genius and innovation and breakthrough and so outside the box. Did I understand the story right that Apple turned it down and didn't want to run it at first?
Yes. Originally, they were just too afraid. They just felt like it was too out there. People weren't going to get it. And so what we had to do, and it was actually my boss who did this at the time, she went around the country sitting down with regular people and showed them the ad. And she found that their response was so emotional and so empowered. And they were so excited that we came back and said, "You're absolutely fools if you don't run this."
And the rest is history.
I mean, Shai Day felt so strongly about it that they said that they would spend their own money to run the ad on the Super Bowl. So they were going to put their money where their mouth is.
Oh, it's amazing. Let's talk about this, all these years of study and deep diving that you've done into the human brain and thoughts and feelings and emotions and impulses and buying decisions. And talk about how that can impact an individual's branding of themselves. Take us through the, if you would, take us through the process of how it works with your innovative thinking.
Yes. Well, so one of the things I just wanted to point out is that while I was deeply embedded in my career working with brands and doing big ad campaigns, I started noticing that some of the newly premier brands, some of the brands that were succeeding in the marketplace, were starting to succeed actually without advertising. And they were brands like JetBlue and Starbucks and Zappos and Amazon and Whole Foods. And I started asking myself, what is it that these brands are doing that is catching on so strongly that they can actually succeed without doing any advertising at all? And I married the findings with what I was finding from some of these natural succeeders in the marketplace with my own study of neuroscience and how the brain makes decisions. And what I started seeing is that these brands were actually succeeding because they were operating in sync with the natural wiring of the brain. In other words, what we're finding in neuroscience is that people are actually making decisions based on emotion and validating with reason. We're now seeing that feelings trump reason 95% of the time. So esteemed Nobel Prize winner Daniel Kahneman, author of Thinking Fast and Slow, Antonio Damasio, who's done a tremendous amount of work in this area, Gerald Zaltman, who wrote How Consumers Think, actually tells us that 95% of the decisions that we make day to day are made on a gut feeling. Mm-hmm. So in other words, we don't like to think. So in other words, how can we as brands make people feel so good about what we stand for in our interactions with them that they actually return to us over and over again? And actually, they start doing the marketing for us. And this was really what started to propel all of these brands that were succeeding in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. So what I started doing was I decided to codify the learning from the brain science with my own learning and studying of these newly emerging successful brands into these 8 essential principles that really teach you how to build a brand that the brain can love. And what we can do is apply these same principles to energizing and creating stronger connections on an individual level and creating your own personal brands. And essentially what we're trying to do is create neural pathways to yes. In other words, condition people through their interactions with us to feel good about doing business with us. So the first principle that we talk about is that of tapping your authenticity. So in other words, our brain's number one job is ensuring that we survive. So we do that by looking for trustworthy interactions. Because the survival instinct is so important, we have something in the back of our brain called the amygdala. And this basically goes off, it starts firing if we see something that feels inauthentic or untrue. For example, if we see 2 + 2 = 5, the amygdala starts chasing us and saying, you know, this is wrong, this is wrong. So if you think about our amygdala is basically always on alert, always looking for something that feels inauthentic or untrustful, how can we ensure that people naturally trust us? Well, the first thing is to do what we're naturally good at. We want to tap our authenticity. We want to do something that we're so good at and so passionate about that we'd end up doing it even if nobody was paying us.
Yes.
So JetBlue, for example, was so passionate about putting humanity back into air travel that they recreated the travel experience. Whole Foods was so passionate about changing the world's food supply that they created a distribution network for wholesome, better-for-you foods. We all know Apple's dedication to serving the creative people, and Amazon, their mantras start from the customer and work backwards. One of the most inspirational quotes I found in this area was Jerry Garcia from The Grateful Dead, who actually said, "We never set out to be the best of the best. We just set out to be the only ones that do what we do."
Wow, that's brilliant.
So we can look at ourselves and say, okay, what is our unique passion, our unique point of view on our category or our business? What would we do if nobody else would even pay us to do this work? Because we're so good at it and we're so passionate. And we need to find this and harness this and use it as a core truth that fuels your business.
Yes. 80% of the people in the workforce can't say that.
Well, that's so powerful and so true. And yet we all know that we were put on this planet with a unique gift, a unique set of talents, and a unique ability to put together information in a certain way that helps us influence the world in a uniquely differentiating way. And we shouldn't run away from that.
No, it's hard to get to it, but people that get to it, which is the whole point of the show, that people like you that get to it and other guests, the contribution for themselves, their families, their tribe, but for the rest of us is incalculable.
Absolutely. The next step is storytelling. So people talk so much about telling stories, and then what I find is that we actually don't make a practice of it. And yet stories are so powerful. Our brains are hardwired to learn through stories. So stories, by their very nature, create drama, conflict, interest, empathy. They're originally the way that we learned about the world, telling stories by the campfire in the caves. Through stories, we learned how to avoid danger, find the right food, find the right mate. And if you think about brands, you know, Apple is a great example. Where would Apple be without the story of Steve Jobs? I mean, certainly in our minds, there's so much more richness dedicated to the story of Steve Jobs versus Dell or IBM or Microsoft, for example. James Dyson, the famous vacuum designer, has such a brilliant story that almost everybody who is looking for a home appliance knows the story of in 1978, he became frustrated with his vacuum cleaner's performance. And so he took it apart 5,000 times. And he didn't stop. And ultimately, he discovered that the bag was clogging with dust, causing the suction to drop. And he ended up building an industrial force vacuum that can be used in the homes that has absolutely transformed the way people do their housework today. And Dyson today is one of the best-selling vacuums in the marketplace, but everybody who buys it knows and loves the story of the founder, James Dyson. So if you think about the fact that people will connect to you by nature of your story, they want to know how you came to do what you do and why it is that your product is uniquely you and differentiated.
Exactly. What's next?
Well, we talk about selling visually. This is another one that is so simple and yet so overlooked. So the brain processes images 60,000 times faster than text. More than half of our brain's resources are dedicated to sight. Again, our visuals, our optic nerve is essentially responsible for our survival. Through visuals, we're able to identify, again, food, danger, and even a prospective mate.
So a picture isn't worth 1,000 words. It's worth 60,000 words.
It's worth everything. It's worth everything. Right. So if you think about, you need to be thinking very carefully about how do you show up visually. David Bowie is such a great example. He created a differentiated position for him in the marketplace by the way he showed up visually. Clinique, I don't know if the audience will remember, when they came onto the scene, The cosmetic manufacturers, first they surrounded themselves with this beautiful Irving Penn produced photography with this very, very fresh and clean imagery. And at the shelves, they had their salespeople show up in lab coats, which was truly differentiated at the time and gave the sense that this was actually a doctor endorsed product. So you can be thinking of, you know, how are you showing up in the marketplace? Are you a jean jacket and red lipstick kind of girl? Are you a Brooks Brothers more conservative, established kind of offering? Mm-hmm. And again, this really needs to be in sync with who you authentically are. But be aware that we're making impressions in less than a split second. Yes. And so the colors, the fonts, the infographics, the product demonstrations are critical. Anything that you can do to sell visually will be intuitively preferred and appreciated over text, which takes far longer to process.
This is so fascinating. I just want to congratulate you on the work you've been doing on this, because it just makes complete sense.
Well, it does. This is all intrinsic human behavior. And what's so fabulous is that what we're saying is that all of this information is readily available and you can implement these practices effortlessly. It's not like you need a Super Bowl commercial anymore to promote your brand.
Right. Yeah, this problem when solved will be simple, but nobody has solved it in quite the stepwise fashion. Or, I mean, who can think through these things on their own? It's just not how we're programmed to tackle our lives and careers. It's
well,
amazing.
We've all been taught to think about logical, smart solutions.
Right.
And if we also understand that our brain is making decisions based on how it feels to do business with you, we would spend a whole lot more thinking about these very, very simple emotional gateways.
Well, exactly. And the good news about this, though, I mean, you're on the cutting edge of putting this into a format that people, you are the cutting edge, I guess, that people can understand. But, you know, the emotional intelligence camp has been out there, and
yeah.
You know, people say, oh, yeah, whatever, airy-fairy. Well, it's not only not airy-fairy, but in a recent study of several that I saw in Forbes, or Fortune, I can't remember, the number one attribute, the characteristic that people are looking for, even in high-tech companies, is not more knowledge and more techie savvy. They're looking for empathy, because it's about connection and creativity and collaboration. The whole world is. And that's exactly what you're saying. I mean, the emotional side is since Goldman in 1995, I guess, and before that with what you were saying at Shite Day, the scientists and thinkers have known this, and now it's coming into mainstream.
It's now coming into mainstream. And I think that what's going to end up happening is that the recruiting, the tests, I mean, even think about the SAT. What are the colleges actually measuring for? You know, they're not even looking at probably more important criteria than your, you know, your SAT score.
Which proves that you can do well in the SAT. I've always thought it was bogus.
Yes.
And I've always thought it was completely bogus. So, but again, it's that linear left brain world. It's the difference between Newtonian physics and quantum physics, quantum mechanics. And
exactly.
Newtonian physics is the structural side, and hey, it's vital. But the rest of it, equally vital or more so, is the quantum side, is the subatomic side.
Yes, it's ultimately about the feeling. So
right.
Just going through very quickly the remaining principles.
Sure.
The next one is consistency. Again, as a feature of our survival, we seek trust, we seek certainty, and we gravitate towards the familiar. How often do you go to a restaurant and you order the same food every single time because you know it's going to turn out exactly the way you want it?
Too often.
Yes, because we're creatures of comfort. Ultimately, we want a sure thing. So we need to be thinking of how to make it easy and effortless to help our clients do what they need to do. How to ensure that the transactions that they have with us, our product, our service, feels intuitively satisfying and as painless as possible. Amazon is certainly a company that has created a business around consistency of interaction.
Yes.
So this is just another one. Just make sure that your website isn't too painful to get through. It's not too hard to get through to you, that your process isn't too aggravating. Because ultimately, you're just going to find that your customers are going to start drifting away because it doesn't feel like a sure thing.
Right.
The The next one is stimulating the senses. This is a simple one, an easy one, and yet something that we just don't pay a lot of attention to. So through the senses, we just bypass reasons. What happens is our senses connect instantly to our emotional pathways. So what we're doing is through the senses, we're creating very, very powerful memories of what it feels like to do business with you that are going to dictate our future behaviors. So if you think about scent, for example, Abercrombie and Fitch has created an extraordinary multisensory experience in their store through scent and sound. Actually, in the olden days, they all used to pour perfume all over the carpets and make sure that the experience when you walked in just
wow.
super multisensory engaging. Singapore Airlines actually make sure that all of their flight attendants are wearing the same perfume so that when you're walking in, again, you're just getting this waft of incredible emotion that you really aren't even understanding, but it just feels really good to be there. And it's also creating a very powerful memory of what it felt like to be there.
Yes.
And I remember one day I walked into an Ann Taylor store, and this was right after I came out of an Abercrombie and Fitch store, which was so satisfying. And Ann Taylor was playing some 80s music, Madonna, Material Girl kind of stuff. And I thought, oh my God, this is how I remember the brand. And now you're showing me by your music that you're stuck in the 80s, something that they were absolutely trying to get away from. And it just felt so cliche and so old school and just not paying attention to the subconscious processes that are happening in your customer's mind. You're creating a feeling, you're influencing in ways that you may not even understand.
Exactly.
If you think about texture, remember when you bought your iPhone and the satin smooth feeling of the white box?
Yes.
They spent a fortune making that box, and probably nobody even thinks about it, and yet it leaves a residual feeling of high quality and extrasensory pleasure, even when I'm opening the box.
Exactly.
So you can be thinking about what sounds are embedded into your website. What music are you using, you know, in the background on your hold and your, you know, with your call center? All of these things can create either a feel-good experience or a feel-bad experience.
Exactly. Exactly. What's next?
The next one is novelty. Now, this is crazy, but while on one hand, we want to be working on consistency and a consistently satisfying, painless experience, we also want to be providing novelty. Our brains are primed to be specialists at detecting the new, what's different, what's changed. And again, this is linked into our primal need to be on alert and ward off danger. So as a result, we respond and react unconsciously to signals of change. We're constantly seeking and searching the new. And this we've evolved to respond positively to the new. And we find that it actually increases our levels of dopamine. So when we walk into Starbucks and we see a new pumpkin spice chai tea, we actually get excited. We get excited when we see updated packaging and updated website. We have to be careful of not providing too much newness so that it feels unfamiliar, but creating a consistent feeling of novelty and newness and staying up to date is also very, very important for us.
Yes, yes, makes total sense.
So the next one is community. This is so powerful, so important. Essentially, we are social creatures. We want to be part of something bigger than ourselves. We naturally crave this. And all of this is, of course, going back to our all-important tribal sense of belonging, which, again, was critical to our surviving out in the savannah, depending on sticking together, defeating the enemy together, finding food together, divvying up the task together. So that when we find companies with values that we relate to, we want to stick with them. So companies like Whole Foods or Trader Joe's, Airbnb is just doing such a lovely job with helping us feel like we can belong anywhere in the world. There is a company that I'm working with now that's called WeWork, and it's a communal workspace where companies can come in and rent out offices all under one big roof, and they're expanding so rapidly. But they have mantras all over the building saying, create your life's work. We're better together. Do what you love. And essentially, that's what we entrepreneurs are there to do together. Yes. We can also do things like create belonging behaviors and rituals. So thinking about the Corona lime squeeze, the Guinness pour, these are essentially rituals that we do to be part of this brand community.
Exactly.
So you can think about what are your own personal mantras? What are your own rituals? Do you give somebody an espresso every time they come in for a meeting? Do you have a rule with your employees that we always get back to our clients within 4 hours, for example, of them contacting? What are essentially your values and your rituals that you create within your own brand to help your clients feel that they're part of a community?
Yes, beautiful. That's perfect.
And then the last one is proof points. So this is a little gift that we're going to give the thinking part of the brain, essentially, because again, we make decisions based on emotion and then we validate with reason. So how can we provide the little tidbits that help us feel that you actually have, you know, proof where the pudding is? So La Mer, again, a women's beauty line, gives us line in their advertising that says the ingredients in our cosmetics basically carry healing broth from the sea.
Wow.
So it's just this beautiful, magical sounding essence that you go, oh, okay, they have some special thing that's from the sea that's going to make my skin better.
Yes.
Icebreaker, this incredible new clothing line, it's a competitor to Patagonia, and they carry a lot of wool undergarments for skiing and that kind of thing. And their proof point is essentially New England sheep from high in the Alps are the sheep that we get our wool from. And these sheep live so high in the Alps that no other sheep could possibly stand the temperatures.
Right.
So there you must understand that our wool is essentially so much stronger than anybody else's
wool. Yes, yes.
So you can think, what are your special reasons to believe? Is it a certain amount of results? Do you have a certain degree? Do you have special training or experience? Do you have a signature or a special characteristic that comes with interacting with you? I personally am told quite often that what makes me unique to work with is my high energy, my laugh, my smile. And so what I try to do in all of my client communications is I try to make it feel good. And on my Christmas cards or my New Year's cards, I put pictures of me essentially smiling and having a good time, because this is one of the things that I want to communicate to my clients, that not only are we going to do really smart work, but it's also going to be fun to do business with my brand.
Exactly. Exactly. It makes total sense. Well, Megan Kent, what a great and illuminating conversation. It's such a delight to have you on the show today and to talk about all these great innovations that you've put together to help not just brands and corporations, but individuals in their own life and career position themselves and grow.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I think it's just so simple and yet so important to remember that it's not just what we say when we communicate with our clients. It's who we are and how we engage, and it's how we make people feel. And there's so many incredibly simple ways to make it feel good to do business with you as a person. And I hope that some of these examples that I've given can be illuminating to you.
Well, I can promise you they are, and we're excited and looking forward to when your book comes out. Do you know when your book's coming out, or is that?
I'm hoping within the next 6 months.
Okay. All right. Well, definitely. Okay. We'll talk about that more. So how do our listeners get in touch with you? What's the best way to connect?
Well, my email is megan@megankentbrandinggroup.com.
Okay. Excellent. Listeners know that you can go to discoveryourtalentpodcast.com to our podcast section, put in Megan Kent's name, get a nice summary of this illuminating interview, as well as other connecting points. I want to thank listeners across the world, as always, for joining us on our daily podcast. We have an ebook, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed? 12 Proven Career Building Strategies to Help You Do What You Love, which is based on the great men and women thinkers of all times in this space. What Megan has added today to that equation is implicit in a lot of that, but it's original in that it never has been put down in one place before. So bravo, Megan, for that. That's an amazing innovation. You can also subscribe for free on our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like our content, join our tribe. We'd like to know how we can serve you better. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.